Now it is time for very serious football talk with a man who hates money almost as much as he hates the idea of a healthy sleep schedule.
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
The man who has so many children, his wife figured he wouldn't even notice if she bought a few chickens and ducks for the backyard.
We could have an episode where we just have my children appear on the show.
I would
in
love.
Ascending order. So we'll do like a minute of Lucas, then 2 minutes of Isabel, then 3 minutes of... Man, I have a lot of kids.
The man who does all of this while being a lawyer in a state that has snow all 12 months of the year.
Until it freezes, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I actually felt very at home driving through southern Iowa. It was snow everywhere, and people were slowing down to like 40. It was adorable. I was driving slowly, but I literally was hanging my head out the window screaming, and that was disconcerting.
It's Seth Kaiser of the Chief in the North newsletter, The Athletic, and the Times Hours podcast on Almost Entirely Sports.
It's a very busy Tuesday, and Seth Kaiser is back with us to celebrate it. I guess celebrate might be sort of a strange word for a cut-down day, because there's obviously a lot going on in that. Lots of emotions, lots of guys finding different spots, maybe ending up on the 53-man roster, maybe not. A lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on, and I can announce right now here for you, Seth, there's going to be something about it coming up soon on the Chief in the North newsletter, so I'm looking forward to that already, even though our conversation just began.
It's always nice for you to set high expectations before we even start. It scares me, but I'm excited as well.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I think high expectations, usually scary, usually don't live up to them. But at that very beginning, it makes people feel good. And by the time they're disappointed, they might not even realize it.
Absolutely. That's actually how, almost verbatim, how I proposed to my wife.
I was pretty confident that was going to be the punchline.
That's always the punchline, isn't it? Oh, that's what my wife said.
Yeah.
On a side note, just completely unrelated, because I referenced my wife in that respect, which I did have someone once tell me that maybe I should just refer to her by her name because she's not like mine.
You love Borat, though, so it's so hard for you not to just say, it's how I proposed to my wife.
Yeah,
you just do that all
my
the time.
Wife. Yeah. It's just I hardly ever say her name.
Yeah.
She pointed that out to me a few years ago, that when I say her name, she thinks I'm, like, mad at her. And so because I always call her, like, babe or hun or darling or whatever
darlin'.
What the thing is.
You know, I call her babe or hun or darling. You know, one of those normal things.
Yeah, yeah. Cupcake, whatever.
Are you Kenny Chesney like 20% of the time?
And so,
hey,
I
the house, darling. Sorry, I'm done.
She does really like that song. So I can't call her that to other people, so I always just end up saying my wife. One fun thing about being a parent, though, which is where I was going to go with this, is that you get to end statements to kids all the time with your mom, and it sounds like you're constantly dunking on them. It's like, oh, what's going on tonight? Well, I'm actually going to go out with your mom. And it never stops being funny. It's like, well, that's not what your mom said to me.
That's really, you know what? I hadn't given that any thought, but I like that. That's pretty funny.
It's so much fun.
Wow. that's very good. Well, I don't have any idea how to segue to talk about Jody Fortson, but I would like to. I just feel kind
you know of... what else is fun? Fortson season.
You're really close. You got to pull it together. It's kind of a portmanteau.
You got to remember, I'm the guy that says darling. I can't combine those words. That's
it is officially
Fortson season. Yes.
Here on August 31st, it is officially Jody Fort's season. Not only did he make the 53-man roster today, he was one of the two guys they brought up to the podium to talk after Andy Reid before all the cuts were even announced. So Jody Fort's season here with a bang, and they're carrying four tight ends. I know that we're all excited about that, but also we haven't talked to you on this show since you had your Jody Fortson film review come out where you essentially proclaimed, and I'm guessing this is what put Brett Veach over the edge, that he had, in fact, very much earned that roster spot.
I assume that's what was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to do any follow-up to confirm that, but I'm going to assume that it is. It's awesome that he made the roster. And what's fun is the Chiefs do seem to have an understanding of at least a little bit, you know, the pulse of the fans and things that might excite the fan base. And they also, they kind of get it. You know what I mean? Like, in certain things, I think Andy Reid gets it. Like, he gets what a big deal this is to Jody Fortson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to almost make it a couple years in a row. And then to, you know, last year, you know, he talked, you know, that's the awesome story that that Nate wrote, mm-hmm. that there's year just heartbreak and, well, maybe if you change positions, all that. And he manages to finally make it. And one thing I love about Andy Reid is he gets that. And like you said, the fact that they, like, have him up on the podium basically saying, like, hey, dude. And let's not take that to mean too much about his role this year. He's probably not going to be in the headlines much as the mm-hmm. year goes along. He might catch a pass here and there. But odds are it won't be a huge role on the team. But to say, like, hey, dude, this is your day.
Yeah.
Like, because this is probably the best day of his life.
Yeah.
And that it's just such a cool thing. And I thought it was really cool that they recognized it. And I think it is a recognition of the work he's done. And that's what I focused on in terms of learning how to do the dirty work at tight end. He's not going to be an inline tight end, mm-hmm. at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been willing to put on weight and do the dirty work in the trenches and do everything that he needed to do. And so it's awesome to see that rewarded.
Was there anything else that, from your review and everything? I mean, you mentioned the dirty work, not an inline blocker and all of that. Is there anything there that, as you went through and looked at him a little more closely as the player, that made you go, like, you know what? I don't think people give him enough credit on X, Y, or Z. Or, boy, this really surprised or impressed me.
I think that I just can't come back enough to the development as a blocker.
Mm.
And just willingness to throw your body around after an entire career of learning to do it differently,
hmm.
right? You,
yeah.
you spend all your career avoiding contact or blocking a certain way, and now it's, no, I need you to throw your body into this 250-pound human. And to do it not just with some willingness, but to actually do it with some technique, it's not as easy as people think. And there are examples across the league of people that, you know, just maybe got recently moved to the tight end position and just weren't able to block. Not that I'm talking about anyone in specific, because I don't want to get myself in trouble. But
you,
there are some recently...
You making a real heel turn and dunking on a former, collegiate and professional football player who tried to make that pivot with his various sort of, I mean, their, anybody, you know, their fictional... sort of aura around them, you dunking on that fictional person would be an incredible twist, I think, in your character arc.
Yes, which is why I would never do that.
I don't even know. I mean, there's no one you would do it to, because that person doesn't exist. That's a fictional thing.
Indeed. That seems almost impossible. But it was very impressive to watch that. And to
oh, were you talking about Tim Tebow?
You know, so with Jody Fortson, the thing is that it was impressive to watch him develop that ability, because it's not as easy as people think to shift from one mindset to the other.
Sure.
And to actually alter your body and how you're built. And he doesn't seem to have lost a lot of his athleticism. He's not like this incredible athlete for a tight end, but he's a good one. And he attacks the ball. He's got some burst. It really is fun. And then some of the second level blocking stuff that he was doing too, in terms of staying in the lane and keeping up and mirroring movements at the second level, he looks like he's natural at that. And so those things are fun to watch. I hope he gets a chance to make a few plays this year, because that would be a lot of fun.
Me too. Since we're kind of going on roster stuff right now, I want to just know what you think and what you thought whenever you saw that Cornell Powell was among the cuts. Like, I don't want to be revisionist and say it's not a surprise. I don't think it was a surprise from the last 2 weeks, maybe. But it's the first draft pick in Brett Veach's time as GM of the Chiefs that did not make the initial roster. Even guys who went lower than Powell did. He had a nice senior season at Clemson, a good senior bowl. He seemed like he was going to be a pretty good fit. fit in this offense. I am not optimistic that he's going to clear waivers, because I'm sure that some other teams that had a similar grade on him will probably be interested in adding him to a thinner receiver group. Maybe he ends up in the practice squad. I would hope that he does, but are you surprised, or if you even could take yourself back to pre-training camp, how surprised would you have been? And then what do you think kind of went into all that with Cornell Powell not making it?
I think when I wrote about Powell, the thing that I wrote about him is that there's a clear plan there in terms of a skill set. And that was always his road to making it. And I think one thing that I didn't write about that maybe I could have at the time is when your road to making a roster or to not even making a roster, but to contribution mm-hmm. is a narrow road. It's a narrow skill set. It's yeah. We think you do A, B, and C well. And those are the three things we think you do well. So you need to do those things well. It's a little different from, say, like, being a receiver who maybe might do a variety of things well, doesn't have maybe speed limitations, that sort mm-hmm. of thing. And I think that pigeonholed him a bit to where it's you need to stand out in those areas
yeah.
rather than just looking overall okay. Right?
Yeah.
Because then the danger that you run into, and I think this is what happened to him here, is if it's a very specific skill set they're looking for, it's more likely that they can find someone that has that specific skill set who maybe looks a little more athletic than you, mm-hmm. maybe stands out just a little more in preseason play. And that was always the danger with Powell, is that it was a narrow skill set thing they were looking for. And he just got beat out at those things. You know, he got outplayed by someone I don't think the Chiefs expected him to. And that's another good story. I mean, you know, at the bottom end of the wide receiver group.
Yep.
And so I'm a little surprised. But, I mean, when I went to camp, he didn't look like the sixth best receiver there.
Right.
And so it didn't stun me. And the final thing worth noting with wide receivers, and a few people did mention this, that when you've got a guy who was in college for 5 years mm-hmm. and really didn't do anything until that last year, that's at least worth noting. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, if it takes until someone's 23, a good friend, Ryan Hall of the Amateur Hour podcast,
yes, sure.
RIP, they were basically...
Ryan's fine. Ryan is okay. The podcast is sort of on infinite hiatus.
Well, yeah, it's on hiatus.
You said Ryan and Amateur Hour and then RIP. I just didn't want anyone to think that anything had happened to Ryan.
Oh, yeah, no, nothing happened to Ryan. Ryan's great.
Rest
in peace, the Amateur Hour podcast. That is a good correction
Thank
there.
Thank you.
But they were kind of the OGs of Chiefs podcasting before there were 400 of them,
right.
Of which we are proud, you know, contributors.
Absolutely.
So he pointed out that Mecole Hardman is 6 months older than Cornell Powell.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And people are really hard on Mecole Hardman. And it's like, well, he's looked exponentially better than Powell mm-hmm. in the preseason. And it just goes to show there's just only so much time to develop. And so I would say maybe if you've got a guy that just doesn't do a ton until his senior year, that's worth noting. So that was a long road to a short thought to say it's not the most surprising cut, other than the fact that he's a draft pick.
Yeah, I mean... I know this is not this cut and dried, so I don't want to, you know, just go, well, they don't know what they're doing. But they took him 45 spots before they took Trey Smith, who was like the steal of the draft, got him in the sixth round. And they could have taken Trey Smith sooner if they really thought. And again, I know that part of that is we think Trey Smith will still be there. We don't think Powell will be, whatever. I understand all that. They also could have taken a receiver earlier, and I would have loved that at the time. And I was relatively optimistic about Powell. I don't want to push your hand. I'm interested in what you think that shows from a talent evaluation standpoint, because I can't imagine that they were surprised by what they saw from Powell necessarily in camp. But it obviously didn't end up working. And if they just want to, I'm gonna cut myself off. I'll tell you what I think after you tell me what you think.
I need the question again.
What? Yeah, totally fair. What do you think about how the Chiefs got to this point with drafting him in the fifth round and then cutting bait 4 months later?
I think they probably got there because they got maybe a little bit more than they were expecting from some unexpected places. And so for me,
it's kind of one of those things you have to look at the picture as a whole. I personally view fifth-round draft picks about the same as undrafted free agents, honestly, in terms of likelihood that you're going to get, like, a guy who does more than special teams or even does well on special teams.
Isn't a little bit of Brett Veach's MO now, though, that he gets really good production out of late-round draft picks? Like, isn't that – don't we do that for Rashad Fenton and Mike Dana and Trey Smith? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's – I'm not sure that that's at least the reputation. I understand that you have a different –
sure, but if you that. But if you hit on, like, one out of five fifth-round draft picks, you're hitting at an above-average rate. And that's where it just doesn't – it doesn't bother me that much. It's just a matter of I view that all as roster churn. And I think they were just churning, and they churned out someone. I think if I can never be sure. Is it just Fountain? Fountain?
Fountain. It's like the thing that shoots water out of the ground.
Yes, thank you. I never pay close enough attention during the broadcast, so I got to do better than that, Fountain. I apologize.
Wow, you really bullied me for paying too close of attention to the preseason broadcast. Oh, what a turn of events.
Yeah. This is very heel turn segment.
Really is
for me.
Yeah.
So I think Fountain just impressed, and I think if he hadn't, I'm guessing that spot would be Powell.
I think you're right. I think that's true.
And so I think I'm curious if it says a lot about Powell. Curious if it says a lot about Fountain. But it's not like, you know. I mean, you know, they had other spots that they could have given, mm-hmm. right? It's not like they're, you know, the idea that, you know, some of the receivers there were untouchable. But I do think that, you know, they only kept five receivers. Hill, Hardman, and Robinson were always going to be there, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And the people are like, oh, I don't know, Robinson might be on the bubble. It's like, Robinson's not on the bubble.
That was
never a thing.
Yeah.
Pringle, I think, was a pretty guaranteed spot.
Yeah.
And knowing that as of now they're only keeping five, I think in part because they're keeping four tight ends.
And Kemp is almost certainly going to be back, is something that Matt Derrick pointed out shortly thereafter. Because since he's the veteran, then he doesn't have to go through the waiver process, all that.
Yeah, he's almost certain to come back. And so I think once you got down to, you know, five or even six wide receivers, I think it just became tougher than people think to make the roster. And I just think that maybe because there was so much hype around Powell, because him and Gray got a lot of hype coming mm-hmm. out. And this is, I think, the backside of draft hype.
For sure.
Is that you become surprised when a rookie who, statistically speaking, is very likely to not work out, doesn't work out. So this is, like, the other side of that, right? Like, we're thrilled when, like, Mike Dana turns into, like, a viable player.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flip side of that is, When it doesn't work out, you're suddenly like, well, wait, what happened? Then I think that enough people saw highlights of Powell and certain things of that nature to make them think that it was more likely than not.
Darwin Thompson, for the record, like Darwin Thompson getting cut 2 years after being a sixth-round pick or whatever that's not going to turn me into yelling about how Brett Veach doesn't know what he's talking about. But the specifics of the guy not making the roster is at least unique, and I mean it is literally completely unique for Veach's time here. Do you feel any differently about the receiver group now that we know who it's going to be? With again Fountain being the guy that comes in and impresses, and I'm not saying they even made the wrong move in picking Fountain over Powell. I probably would have kept Powell on the roster over Dorian O'Daniel, but I don't think that Dave Tobe would have liked that, so it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you feel about that receiver group that you just rattled off now that we're in this place where, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the Chiefs' second and third receivers while they're really their third and fourth pass catchers and maybe fifth and sixth. And now that depth there is pretty, I mean, it was good enough to keep Powell from making the active roster. Do you think that it's going to be good enough for the offense in the regular season?
Absolutely. I mean, barring catastrophic injuries, yes. And that's this offense is much, much more about the trio of Mahomes, Kelce, and Hill than it is anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know what? I mean, you throw in the offensive line as a unit there. If those things are good, it matters who the receivers are. It couldn't be you and me,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't matter nearly as much. And I think that's just something that gets lost somewhat. I know a lot of people say things like, well, you know, take Tyreek Hill off, and then what do you have? And I get that because, you know, you end up, like, if you look at, like, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster, if they lost Mike Evans, they still got Godwin and Brown. I get all that. But that's a unique situation. And I would just say that, you know, I think that's what people compare it to, is teams that are situated better than anyone else in the NFL. And that's like the comparison, where I would just say, I think, yeah, pretty much any team that's built around a star receiver, if you take that star receiver out, yes, that would be catastrophic.
Yeah.
And so that just doesn't move the needle for me too much. I feel it's pretty much the same as I did, maybe a little more optimistic than I would have had it been Powell over Fountain, because to be honest, I felt like Fountain outplayed him,
yeah.
And that would have felt like a default win.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what we were talking about, why it's impressive that Niang is winning that right tackle job from all appearances, because it wasn't a default win, because they like Mike Remmers.
Right.
You know what I mean? It would have been the opposite of that situation. So I guess I feel like 2% better. It's not a significant amount, though.
I hope we get to see like a little bit of Fountain out there. I do think that for the most part, we're going to have spent a lot of time talking about Fountain, Kemp, and Powell, and then DeMarcus Robinson is going to get most of the X receiver snaps. Like, I think that's probably,
yeah.
or Pringle, I guess. But I think that's probably the most likely thing. I want to talk to you about the offensive line a little bit, because you had a piece specifically looking at Creed Humphrey go up since the last time we talked on this show. And I'm excited. And I know you're excited also. This does not include the stats from the Vikings game yet. I imagine they will not change a whole lot. But through the first two preseason games, Creed Humphrey, remind me really quick how many – I did this bit on TimeZars. I'm going to do it again. I don't care. I'm shameless. Remind me again how many losses you've charted for Creed Humphrey, because I have a hard time remembering the specific number.
That would be the same number of times you and I have followed through on being tased or eating a ghost pepper.
That's
it
probably at least one, right?
Zero.
Oh, it was zero.
It is the number of times that I have said to myself, man, I want another kid. It is. Since I had all five, mind you. I love you, kid.
Nope. No, you said that the way that you said it. I immediately thought, that probably says some things about the kids you do have.
I mean, I love them all. They're all awesome. But the number of times, how about this? The number of times Jazz and I have said we want one more kid since having our fifth kid, and saying, man, that's a lot of kids.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
That's
a whole buttload of kids right there.
A lot of kids.
And so they would be zero. And I'm going to be charting his snaps here. Last week I had a trial that just took up all my time. I'm waiting on getting a little more information, and then I'm going to try to chart his snaps. My plan is actually to write about Lucas Niang, because I think Trey Smith has gotten a ton of publicity and coverage. I might write about Orlando Brown, too, because there's just some interesting things there. He's basically winning ugly, which is interesting.
Hmm.
But Humphrey, there's an argument to be made, and I said this on TimeZar, too, that if it weren't for the fact that Joe Tooney is a robot, Creed Humphrey would be the best lineman of the preseason, and he still might be. I think he's been just a little bit better than Tooney during the preseason. Now, I don't expect that to continue, because Tooney's just—he's just a machine. He looks the same against everyone. It's hysterical and kind of cool. Humphrey's been awesome, though, and that's kind of flown under the radar a little bit. I want to see if he kept that up, because it would be really cool to say that he pitched a shutout for the entire preseason. That'd be fun.
Be awesome, yeah. Well, you got to go read the piece in the Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com, and watch him do all of these different things. It's watch him in space. It's watch him grind through a run block. It's watch him clear out a lane. It's watch him protect Patrick Mahomes. It just seems like at every turn, and again, there's all sorts of gifts throughout this and everything, at every turn, it seems like Creed Humphrey has basically aced every test.
That would be a really accurate way of saying it. He has just done absolutely everything they've asked of him. There's one snap in particular where he's matched up against a 330-pound defensive tackle and just stonewalls him. It's a fun one to watch, because at the same time, Joe Tooney just owns a spin move. It's a lot of fun to watch. He's just done everything that they need.
And the strength at the point of attack was supposed to be something that was maybe a question with him. And so far, he's looked a little stronger than advertised in terms of how he looks on some of these double teams and combo blocks. He's been a bit more of a road grader than I expected, while being just as good in space as I expected. Now, does that mean he's been Trey Smith as a road grader? No, it doesn't. But I expected him to be more like an average guy in terms of push, and he's been above average there. And it's really cool to watch. And you and I have long, I mean, it's been 3 years of us telling people the run game doesn't matter as much as people think,
mm-hmm.
right? To the point where I've like almost gotten bored of the discussion
yep.
and started to flip sides on you over the last year,
which has been
kind of fun.
We talked about running backs for a little while yesterday because people were very sad about the Chiefs cutting Darwin Thompson and Derek Gore and, you know, J.K. Dobbins and Travis Etienne get hurt and they get replaced by guys who have put up incredible production over the years and all of that. And like I'm not going to tweet about it again in that form because it's not enough space, and talking about it has gotten kind of boring and has sort of just become I've become a parody of myself completely by accident. Anyway, you can
yeah.
continue that. Sorry, that was just me being selfishly self-conscious.
I totally understand. I think that's part of the reason why I haven't changed my position on this at all. You and I agree like 95% of the way, probably actually more like 99.9. I just, maybe even 100 now that I think about it, but I just get to the point to where when I hear something repeated over and over and over again, I start to say, well, okay, let's make sure we don't overstate it,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it gets to the point to where it's easy for people to think the run game itself doesn't matter.
Sure.
And the run game does matter.
Mm-hmm.
It just matters a lot less than the passing game. I would say it matters probably more than either aspect of your defense.
Hmm.
Just because it's less dependent on the opponent,
yeah,
right? Because
sure.
passing defense, a lot of that is dependent on how well your opponent plays.
Yeah.
Now, a pass defense is more important. I can't.
Yeah,
the passing game rules reign supreme in the NFL. But the interesting thing with the run game, and I'm actually tinkering around with this, because I was a bad friend last week, and I'm just like...
You'll have to be more specific.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
You'll have to be more specific about the time you were a bad friend.
Oh, the times we call them legion, for they are many. But this time was when I was sitting there like, but what if establishing the run's important? And I'm sitting there just being a complete twerp. Here's the interesting thought process I have, though. I think establishing the run matters, maybe even a lot. It just doesn't mean remotely what people have thought it meant for years. People for years have acted as though, like, you need to really pound that rock to establish a run. I think you maybe need to run the ball well, like, once.
So here's where I'm at right now. I don't think I've talked about it for the 2021 Chiefs, really, on this show, like, at all. And so I'll take this as a little Cliff's Notes excuse to do it. The Chiefs are going to run the ball well this year, like, the same times that they ran the ball well against Buffalo when, like, their linebackers are backpedaling at the snap. You also want to be able to take advantage of that. Like if a defense is going to rightfully live in fear of Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes, and you cannot punish them for doing that, then your offense is like it does get flat. Now I still think that Patrick Mahomes just throwing the ball against, you know, 11 defensive backs that all drop in coverage, I think would probably still be a very good offense. But if you're being given a gift by the defense, you ought to take it. And with the line this year, and with them, I'm sure they're going to give Clyde probably more touches than I want them to. But they're going to have a good run game this year, and they're going to be benefited by that offensive line, and there are going to be times when it's super helpful. My concern, and this is where like the phraseology of establishing the run ends up being very self-defeating, is that you do that 15 more times than you actually should, and it ends up kind of
right.
washing out the advantage that you just built for yourself.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that they're going to have to figure out this year in terms of bounce, but the right kind of bounce. Bounce doesn't mean doing everything the same amount, right? Like,
yeah.
I need bounce.
Yeah.
Like, here's the analogy. I need bounce in my relationship with my wife and my relationship with you, Josh.
Yeah.
I need some bounce in that. But that does not mean I'm going to spend the same amount of time with you as I do with my wife, because that would be insane.
No one would want that. Yeah.
No one wants that. Literally, no one on earth wants that. And so the idea is actually finding the correct balance in saying, okay, we want to make teams pay.
and we want to make them pay big. And that's that second part, I think, is the big difference for this year. They struggled with that last year because it's by and large a run blocking thing, unless your running back is Jamal Charles. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I don't think he's Jamal Charles. Jamal Charles is one of the greatest football players to ever play. I will never, ever, ever back down from that argument with anyone. Mm-hmm. But you need to make them pay big. Make them fear big plays, even when they're playing that way. Make them fear the run game so that they're forced to make difficult choices, to where it's not an easy choice. Now, are you still going to want to pass the vast majority of time? Yes, because that's going to be the move. However, like you said, I like the way you frame that. When the defense gives you a gift, you want to be able to take it.
Yep.
And you want to be able to take it well. Yep. And that's kind of thing. Like the Buffalo game is a good example of that. But you want them to be able to even do it more, right? Mm-hmm. You want them to be able to rip off multiple 20-yard gains and force them because – and here's where you can take advantage of the fact that they're still – with the way NFL coaches think of this stuff, you're still going to get those opportunities to pass again because no matter how much it doesn't make sense analytically, if you are running the ball well, they are going to shift out of too high eventually. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to help themselves. Now, maybe not every coach. Maybe a few will say, no, by God, we are not letting Mahomes beat us. But for the most part in the NFL, they're going to eventually shift. And when they do, you have them.
Here's the other part of that.
That's the key there.
Here's the other part of that, though. Also, you don't have to guess because you can just call an RPO and then have the answer. Patrick Mahomes can decide the answer. He can decide are they going to adjust to the fact that we're able to run the ball and punish them 8 yards at a time, or are they going to continue to fear me, the flaming, the fire-breathing dragon that I am, scorching them from above? Like, just if the Chiefs run a bunch of RPOs and, like, never any designed runs, and it's just about Mahomes reading the defense and then making that call in the backfield, you're not going to hear me complain about it. I don't like the predetermined we're going to run the ball here and here and here and here because we're going to establish it, you know? But, I mean, I think you've also more or less laid out a bunch of that, so.
Yes, and I think, yeah, you described that very, very well. I do love the idea of the RPOs playing a big role,
yeah,
and being able to do it more. I actually wrote about that at The Athletic, that I think you're going to see more R in the RPOs because we reached a point to where it looked to me at times that Mahomes was pulling the ball and throwing even when the read was probably better to run. And I don't think it's because he was making a stupid decision. I think, one, he's insanely confident, and if he thinks it's a 50-50 decision, he's gonna keep the ball. If he thinks it's a 40-60 decision, he's going to keep the ball.
Absolutely.
Even if it's 40 against him, right?
I'm fine with that.
40-60 against him?
Yeah,
either way.
I think
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so he understood that they just weren't good at running the ball. The odds of them getting blown up a little bit, they were higher than they should have been. And so you end up with some forced throws. And so I think you might see a little more of the R and RPO, which only helps the passing game in that respect as well. It's not necessarily a schematic advantage at that point. It's a reactionary advantage.
Yeah.
Teams believe that you will R in the RPO. That's a big deal. And so I think it's going to help in little ways and maybe really noticeable ways. I'm just excited to see what the offense does, which I know we got dragged on a long road to a short thought here, but it really is that the third or fourth wide receiver is like, eh, so.
Right.
Creed Humphrey's awesome. Yeah. That's how we got there.
And Creed Humphrey's
great. Man, he looks good.
Yeah.
He looks so good.
I'm happy to have that little sidetrack because the next time we talk, you'll have a further look at Creed and also a overarching look at Lucas Niang, right? You said that's kind of up next?
That's the goal, yes. There's a few things I really want to write on. I want to write about Niang. I want to write about what establishing a run should actually mean. And so Humphrey should become a part of that.
The phrase sucks because then it's going to end
it
up. It's going to because it also turns into those stupid graphics that's, you know, Chiefs were 11-2 with running the ball for 100 yards last year. And I just like I can't do that anymore. I think I'm at a place in my life where I can't anymore. I have to let that go. And I need
Absolutely.
People to stop being dumb about it.
It really is. That really is a tough conversation. And often what I try to tell people when they talk about how they're kind of annoyed with the way some of the conversation is framed with running the ball, what I tell people is that
It is, if it feels like an overreaction, it's because there is a lot to react to. There, like the way that the conversation has been framed has been so inaccurate,
yes,
and set it up in such bad ways that it's important to almost overreact in the correction of that, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. That's a conversation I've had about politics before that ends up, and you want to get into that. You got another 20 minutes or so you'd like to dig into on that one, right? Would you like to leave?
Oh, goodness. Look at the time.
Look at the time. No, but you're right. I am not really here to apologize to people who, you know, think that running the ball for 100 yards means that a team is guaranteed a victory. I'm not going to apologize for pushing back too hard on that, because boy howdy, are there a lot of people pushing that direction already? And boy howdy, is it silly. So,
and that was an excuse to say boy howdy, really.
Boy howdy, darling. This was a good radio segment. If you want to read what's coming up on the Chief of the North newsletter, you can go to mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Or if you want to get a link straight to the insane deals that Seth is literally always giving away for the newsletter, you can go to bit.ly/SethHatesMoney. Or it's bit.ly/SethReallyHatesMoney, I think, to take you directly to the deal page. You'll see it when you get there. You can sign up for $12 for a year. And at the end of the year, Seth, correct me if I'm wrong, at the end of the year, that jumps up to $240 a year, right?
It's $12 a year forever if you take advantage of the deal.
Have some self-respect.
You know, I that ship has sailed.
Clearly, you've been doing this show for years. MNChiefsFan.substack.com. $12 a year forever for some of the absolute best Chiefs analysis you're going to find anywhere. MNChiefsFan.substack.com. Also, you can follow him on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. Seth, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Life is good. I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
I was kind of hoping you'd call me darling, but maybe next week. Attention, listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Pick up the Performance Package 4.0 and you'll feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST. Every single thing that we here at Almost Entirely Sports have gotten from Manscaped over the last few months has been genuinely excellent. It's not just a catchphrase. They really are the best in class in male grooming. The lawnmower is exceptional at its very specific job. The boxers that Manscaped has is incredible. All of us became fans of the cologne whenever we got that in our last package from Manscaped. It smells amazing. I'm wearing it right now. So what are you waiting for? Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping with the code ALMOST at manscaped.com.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
You're not going to let me talk about like the targeting thing for the next
targeting.
6 minutes, are we? That's just not, I don't
well,
think
I mean, you asked what I wanted to talk about, then you wanted me to pull up the Call Me Out audio. So you
What's
know,
his that's... name?
Listen, that was your fault.
What's the name of that host for Fox Sports 1?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Call Me Out
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
What's Beards' best mispronunciation?
I think it's Vince McMersh.
Vince McMersh is so... Here's the thing. I don't know if Vince McMersh is the best or if it was simply the first, you know?
I mean, there were some ESPN Kansas City ones where I said, like, quite a much and called it the United Arab Emirates.
United Arab Emirates
is
very good.
Is my favorite.
Because he swings and misses and he gets right back in that box.
Wait, oh, no, hang on.
Cox is bad again.
No, let me find the audio
no,
for it because
fine.
It's
yeah.
even better than I remember it because I got it wrong two different times, two different ways.
Right, I'm just filling here because you're right. He's ready for United and he swings and misses, hops back in the box, gets his bat back up there on his shoulder, gets ready to swing again, and then it goes poorly, which is fun.
Thanks again to both Lyle Graverson and Seth Kaiser for joining us. I'll also give you a little PSA here. It's my last AES for a couple of days. This is the last show, and we're going to end it with Arab Emirates. I don't think you actually got that far into Emirates. No, I'm off the next few days, and next time you hear these dulcet tones on the radio, I will be filling in on the zone on Labor Day, right? It's Labor Day? This one Labor
yes.
Day? I always get them confused. I think Rudy's going to be in for the whole show. Beards will have half a dose of Beards, half a dose of Marco. So that show will be a lot of fun. So we'll do that on Monday. But I am going to I'm going to do something crazy these next few days. Going to take a break. And not be on the radio.
How dare you?
Do you have your this particular mispronunciation?
Yes.
Go ahead and let the world hear.
United Arab. What is that?
What was that word?
United. Wow.
Was there a third one?
United Arab. What is that?
What was that word?
United. Wow.
Was there more after that?
No.
Okay. It's me laughing at you.
First McMersh.
During the commercial break, Beards was reading a story about... Do you have the story up, Beards, still
yeah,
you were talking about? Okay.
Yeah, I've got it.
Give me the sort of jump on this one, and I'll tell you how I'm feeling.
I was just browsing Reddit, as I usually do, and I saw a headline here that popped up that was early test screenings of The Batman with Robert Pattinson coming out next year are saying it's a straight-up horror movie and will be, quote, very graphic and very scary, also reportedly has a 3-hour runtime.
The 3-hour runtime is the only thing that I'm not sure I'm going to be here for. I don't like horror movies, generally speaking, but I've seen, like, It 1 and It Part 2, or Chapter 1, Chapter 2, yeah. or whatever. And I think if you are DC trying to make superhero movies, the dumbest thing to do is to try to make Marvel movies. It is to go back to what was the name of the... guy from the first liner here we had for the segment, Beards. Remember his name?
Colin Cowherd?
You said it much better that time. But it kind of ties back to, like, it's for me, it's really frustrating that Fox Sports 1 has basically tried to do knockoff ESPN, and then it's not as good. I don't want DC to try to do knockoff Marvel. I haven't seen the new Suicide Squad, but I thought the previous one was okay. And this was a Shot Clock review a few days back, but I've watched a good amount of the HBO animated Harley Quinn show. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go big, colorful, to try to match Marvel on that level, you got to go farther than that and go wackier. And they've done that a few times. Or you could go really dark and you could drive right past Suicide Squad. You could drive right past Justice League, wave by Christopher Nolan Batman, and apparently get to the point where Paul Dano is bleeping crazy playing the Riddler in this movie with Robert Pattinson playing Batman that is apparently bordering on a horror movie. I just watched the trailer again during the break because I hadn't seen it in a while. Rudy turns away from trailers typically, which I like to do a lot of the times. I like to go in without knowing too much. Yeah. But on something like this, I kind of want to know what I'm in for a little bit.
I will say, again, with the Marvel
cool
movies,
as hell.
And part of this is just like I'm just like hooked to the Marvel movies. And I watch all those. But generally, I stay away from trailers to know as little about a movie as possible going into a movie. Some of them you can't. You just... You're just going
to
say, I remember Thor Ragnarok. I don't remember what streaming app I was using, but literally it was the only commercial. So I bet in a month I saw it, 1,000 times it felt like. Right? I could quote that. At one time it was like I could say it word for word that trailer because it was just the only thing that was popping up.
The one benefit for Marvel movies, generally, I think, is that they're not going to give you too much in the trailer because they know just the amount to give you. And so, like, watching the trailer with Robert Pattinson's Batman here, like, I was afraid that it was going to push it a little too far. And then there was a thread, I think it was in the story that Beards was looking at, of, like, someone telling a friend of theirs about their experience watching it or whatever. And at some point, it's like, and something crazy happens at the end. It's like, I don't even really necessarily want to know really want to know that all the time. But also, I say that out of one side of my mouth. And the other side of my mouth, I'm saying, the idea of a Batman movie with, like, some real detective work that's really dark that maybe has a big payoff of some sort makes me want to watch it, like, right now. Like, I would probably, like, if I could go home tonight and just watch the 3-hour screener version, I would be very tempted. And I freaking hate full spoilers, so I'm going to have to make that decision quickly, I think. Because if I wait around a week and then I see somebody tweets that, you know, that...
It turns out the Riddler was his parents all along.
Ooh, that's pretty good. I was going to say that Robert Pattinson's Batman is also a vampire, and it's a connective tissue to the Twilight universe. And so it's all... Because, I mean, Batman's and the fangs and the vampires, it all... It's right there.
True.
And in fact, maybe they even sort of hint at the vampiric stuff over the course of the movie, but that big twist at the end is all of a sudden shirtless werewolf guy shows up, and boom, it's actually
Jacob?
a Twilight spinoff.
Was what? His first name Jacob?
Yes. Jacob and Edward. I have not seen any of the movies, nor any of the books.
Nope.
I don't say that as a point of defensiveness or pride. I just don't really know.
I remember when that was a thing.
The whole deal. That is what I also remember.
Edward.
Do we think that kids these days, do we think they have stuff that's embarrassing? I mean, everyone, like, TikTok is everything now. So, I mean, they're eventually going to be as old as we are. And probably look back and shame on that. Speaking of, hold on. Where's that sickly party horn? Because we didn't have an AES on Friday, and I forgot to mention it yesterday. So happy birthday to both Beards and Rudy. Friday for Beards, yesterday for Rudy.
Yes.
Appropriately celebrated as such.
On a Tuesday. It was a little better that time. It was very loud.
A little long.
A little long. But it wasn't a sickly.
That was just for Beards. This one's for Rudy.
Oh, God. Holding up pretty good.
Thank you.
I had to turn that down a little bit. It was getting a little much.
Totally fair. I just wanted to give an example of my impressive lung capacity.
I'm sorry, anybody listening to that.
I hated that so much.
And now in celebration of me taking five consecutive days off.
Photo!
It fell out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's how your five days off are going to go. Sometime tomorrow, oh no.
Hey, Josh, you're running baseball tonight tomorrow. We didn't tell you. It's a 4-hour-long version.
Anyway, how old are both of you?
29.
So you're 29, 19. Right, Beards?
Yeah.
Rudy is 19.
That wasn't me saying 30. That was me saying there's 30 seconds left.
Never ask a man his age.
You're 31?
Can't prove it.
31 is fine. Here's the thing. Beards,
I've never seen my birth certificate. I don't know.
Beards at 29. Next year's his big one. Rudy, I think you get to live out at least through 33 before that's a big deal. All right, I'm off for a while. Until then, bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.